complete aside, I was doing editing and I kept hearing this like weird background thumping occasionally. And I was just doing it by the sound. I wasn't really looking at the video. I was just going through looking for audio blips. I'm like, what is that noise? I look over and I see Adam. It's a point where Adam going and not notice he smacked his face with his own microphone. I was like, ah,
all the time. All
I
the time.
That now I can look for that spike and just mute those. Perfect.
Yep. Yep.
So Adam, I've spent a lot of time on airplanes recently with a lot of flights, and
yes,
I tend to have to book my flights a little bit later than I'd like, which means I'm usually picking middle seats.
It sucks.
It is, but the one nice thing, or I should say the one nice thing that's supposed to happen when you've got the middle seat,
yeah,
is you get both armrests, which at least when you're sitting on the airplane and you got to work and you're able to put your elbows nicely on the armrests and work because you're middle seat, you get both armrests. That's nice. I had a flight recently with a guy who not only was he like, well, I was here first, he also decided he didn't get the armrest. He got the other side of the armrest too. Like his arm was in my lap the whole flight.
That's crossing a line. That's
I'm like,
that's where you're going to see Adam's angry face.
I just, at one point, I just leaned into his arm. Oh, yeah. I'm like, hey, we're being friends now. You notice how I'm still in my seat and you're not in mine? The other one that actually really annoys me is I prefer the planes that are the Airbus planes, not because I prefer Boeing to Airbus. I don't give a crap. But the reason is that the Boeing 737, the latest editions of those, the way that the footrests are underneath the seats, if you're on the aisle, the footrest is skewed more towards the aisle on the aisle seat. And so
I didn't even realize that.
If you put your foot straight forward, your foot is resting solidly on the post in front of you.
Oh, okay.
Which if people don't in the middle seat don't notice there's a skew, I've had a guy just have his foot in front of me the whole time because he wanted his foot on the post. And I'm like, look, I'm sitting side saddle here the whole flight. Could you move your foot?
See, one of the advantages of being a man of my size is when I get into the seat, I take up the zone that I'm going to take up. That's all there is to it.
I suppose that's true. And when that happens, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give you some grace. But also, we're going to be shoulder buddies. I'm not going to pretend not to be rubbing elbows with you.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Not going to do that thing where shoulder we try buddies. To not. I'm like, you know what? Let's get comfy here. Put some. Let's get nice and friendly.
Snuggle in.
Well, anyways, welcome to Demo Jockeys, everyone. I am your host, Jack Cochran. With me, as always, my co-host, Adam DiTommaso.
Thank you, Jack. Happy to be
here. We are very excited for the interview that you're going to get to see. Because
this is a good interview.
We had a lot of fun talking about this book, Stolen Focus, that you already know our opinion from last time.
It's a doozy.
It's a doozy. Unfortunately, Lydia did not disappoint with her opinions of the book either.
Yes. They all can't be winners, folks.
No.
They all cannot. Can't be winners.
But still a great conversation. I'm really excited for you to hear how the conversation goes. So let's just hop into it.
Let's get into it.
Lydia, thanks so much for joining us. We're so excited to have you here on Demo Jockeys.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here. The island nice. Energy in the room already.
We like to have fun, right? That's going back to, I mean, you recognize this with your podcast. I know we said we'll talk about kind of what you're up to later, but Wandering Tech Podcast, I feel like you had the same idea. Hey, here's this person I like talking to. We should do a show together, which is exactly where Adam and I were at.
Yeah.
Like, hey. We should do a show together.
People will find it funny, enjoyable, and entertaining.
And if they don't, I will find it funny and entertaining for me.
Oh, God, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it was definitely that. It was just like, oh, and it was also I wish we record the conversations we were having. Like the last 7 conversations would be amazing if we can share it with people. Obviously censored a bit, but.
Yes.
I mean, slightly. Yeah.
But because we're on YouTube, profanity is allowed. So the occasional swear word comes out. I'm in full support of that.
Let's talk about the book. Let's actually do that. I would love to get there's mixed feelings. So Lydia, I would love to get kind of your perspective. What was sort of the main things you took away from the book itself? Positive, negative, maybe
neutral.
Where are you at with Stolen Focus?
I guess I should start from the fact that I always try to find value in the things that I do, including rereading this book again, because so I did get the chance to read it back when it first came out, because it was a big hoo-ha back in the day. It was just like, yeah, you know, this is a big thing. I read it, I hated it, and I never went back into it. I might already be hinting at my opinion on the book. So when Jack was telling me, like, you know, oh, I'd love to have you on the podcast to actually talk about this book, my initial reaction was, no, thank you. how about we read this other book instead? But, you know, considering, you know, I reconsidered a little bit. It was, come on, like, you know, give it a chance. I gave it a chance again. I still don't like it. But I always try to find something valuable in there. So let me start with that. Let me start with the positives, takeaways.
Excellent.
I do think that what Mr. Joan Harry is doing really well is that he's capturing a lot of very different topics and summarizing them into one book. Yeah, so we have 12 different, you know, let's call them chapters, right? Because it's practically chapters. Technically 11, because one of them is practically like two parts into one. So 11 different individual topics that he's trying to cover off with one book, which is not an easy task to do, right? Kudos to that extent. But so that's the positive, right? So he's trying to capture a lot of really important topics that we have right now, you know, plaguing in different variations of the, you know, the world. And it's giving folks which, by the way, fortunately or unfortunately, I'm not in that group. It gives folks that are not really into this sort of productivity, self-help, you know, nonfiction space, a huge overview of the different things that you can be interested in, like flow, like, you know, deficiency disorders, like dieting, like, you know, deep work, you know, all of these bits and pieces. He's giving like a one chapter sort of summary of these different topics and telling a story around it and shipping it off, right? There was one sentence in this entire book that really caught me, because so currently I'm really, you know, I'm trying to sort of restructure my life a little bit. I know we'll talk about this a little bit at the end. And he said something along the lines that, you know, it was around sleep, like, you know, the importance of sleep. All of us are very aware of how important sleep is. So there was something in there about, you know, that, you know, you should aim for 8 hours, even if that means 6 hours now and then 2 hours later in the morning if you woke up for whatever reasons. And suddenly I thought about, like, yeah, of course, I can do that. Yeah. So I think that's about like the two positive things I can think about to say about this book.
that's fair.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm really sorry.
No, you're in good company here. Adam and I talked about that a lot in the last episode. It started off really well. This person just documenting their personal journey of going through digital detox, which everyone has thought about. Even people who are never going to do it have thought about, man, I should just throw my phone away and get away for a while. So I really at first was like, yeah. And I think I was only through those sections when I had talked to you about the book. Like, yeah, this is the book that we're doing. It's like, because I hadn't gone through the full book at that point yet. I was still in the him doing the digital detox. You know, I'd gone through and was like, yeah, my phone needs to have the notifications adjusted so it's not adjusting all the time. Those infinite scroll apps, I hate them. Why don't I just get rid of them off of my phone? And if I really want to do something on LinkedIn, I'll go on my computer on LinkedIn, like make it a conscious choice. So there's a couple of things I was really going, yes, this will help. This will help. And then the book just took this huge pivot into disappointment land.
Yeah. You know, one of my problems with this book, and I'll just throw this out there, and from a reader's perspective, there was always a very abrupt switch, like to another story. And I almost like, at one point, I caught myself at least once or twice in this book going, wait a minute, flip back a page. I wasn't reading about that. Now I'm reading about another thing. And I didn't feel like there was a good transition, if that makes sense. That was one of the balks that I had with the book, just in general, if that makes sense. Like, I don't like that. I think it almost felt like this was a compilation of, you said 11 chapters, and I kind of aspired a thought when I said, well, this feels like this is 11 papers and 11 different stories all kind of mashed together. What I wanted out of the book was to, for some things that I'm going to go do. I could care less. I use LinkedIn on my phone. So you know why I use LinkedIn on my phone? Why I won't delete it is because I check messages when I'm out, when I'm flying, when I'm here, when I'm there. And you know, it's funny. I have a general problem with doom scrolling in the comment of it. Like, and I understand what you're saying, Jack, of getting it off your phone. And yeah, that's a valuable tip. But to me, it's a leisure activity.
And you have the right to your leisure.
Yeah, you have the right to your leisure. If that's how it works for you. It wasn't for me. It was, I would find myself standing going, why am I looking at my phone? Like,
I'll
look at my phone right now. And so for me, it hit that, why am I doing this? Not fun thing.
Curious question for you both, actually. But was there, because obviously now we're talking about doom scrolling. And I don't want this to sound, especially to your listeners, like, you know, oh, look at her, like holier than thou. She doesn't have any of these problems. I didn't take any real tidbits when it comes to like the phone thing, because so I keep a very lean phone from that sense. So whenever he was talking about notifications, like, yeah, of course, your phone should be by default on Do Not Disturb, right? Only your immediate friends and family should be able to reach you throughout the day. Why would you not do that anyway? As a general feeling that I had towards this book, like, this book was not aimed at me, right? I am not the perfect reader for this book.
Neither am I.
I could see someone, I can imagine someone, especially maybe earlier in their lives, haven't been exposed to the, you know, quadruple billion self-help books that I have, and a lot of these ideas are new to them. Maybe. See, I'm still trying to be very positive.
See, that's funny you say that, because I'm new to self-help books. I don't read self-help books. Right. As a matter of fact, before Demo Jockeys, I pretty much didn't read any. I was a very much a, you know, obviously I know how to read. But it wasn't a leisure time activity for me. It wasn't an activity that I went. And so from a first time self-help book reader, I was like, this isn't helpful at all. This isn't, it was 100 pages where I think I even wrote a quote in 100th page, and I'll read it to you. 100 pages to explain your problem. I didn't learn anything. I literally wrote that like in the book. One third of the book is not, wow, that's a long setup.
That's interesting you say that, Adam, because you were genuinely the only sort of reader profile I could imagine this being helpful to. So for example, and this is a little bit, have you folks come across, and this is a very boring book to actually recommend, because I don't really recommend it to read, but it's called How to Read a Book by Mortimer J. Adler. So this is have you heard of it before?
No, and I'm very intrigued, actually.
Right. No, it's, so fair warning, it is not I'm just going to sit down and sort of read a book, right? It's a manual on how to read books. So in that book, and I use it very often, so usually you will find me, like, if I'm going through a book scientific like this, I usually have like the book I'm reading and that book next to each other as a reference guide on what are the things I'm looking for, how am I going through it. So there are a couple of levels of reading through a piece of work like this. So one of them is sort of like figuring out what the book is about in its completion, right? So what does the title mean? What does the back of the book say? What's the table of contents do? Like, what are the different recommendations? What's at the back? What's at the front, right? All of these bits and pieces. Sort of trying to gather up an idea if this book is worth reading, even before we get into it. Obviously, I didn't have the choice because we were preparing for this podcast, but that is usually how I go about with these sort of books. Part of this, you know, the last level, I guess, of reading books is about how does it compare with other books in this area, you know, or other topics within this area. So I think I mentioned even right at the front, at the start, like, you know, something about, or maybe before we started recording, something about flow, something about deep work, something about, you know, sleep and, you know, things like that. So all of these are topics that are covered within this book, but not really in depth. So I was imagining, Adam, someone like you would read these topics and go like, oh, actually, that's, you know, I fancy that topic a little bit more than the other things. Let me go out and figure out of, like, you know, oh, if it's something about deep work and distraction-free work, like, I'll go and look up Cal Newport and see what, you know, the works that he's doing around digital minimalism and all that sort of bit. I'm going to go into flow and see that, like, that part of the wild and wonderful, you know, world of self-help. Or I'll look into sleep and go into, like, you know, how do we sleep, which is like a book that came up a couple of years back, which was actually extremely helpful. But you're now telling me that's not the case.
Yeah.
So who the heck is this book for?
Yeah.
I feel like it's a little bit of a missed understanding of audience, because as I was reading through it, I was asking myself that very same question. Who is this for? Because I certainly took some things away from it, but it was of things that I already knew that I wasn't doing. And it made me go, why are you not doing the things you know you should be doing? And that's what everything was. But I was thinking, well, who is this actually written for? He was writing it assuming nobody in public, it's actually kind of funny, knows what an algorithm is as it relates to social media. That's a very known thing. Most people you ask, are you familiar with the Facebook algorithm? They'll be like, yeah, high level. Facebook's got an algorithm that provides me, you know, topics. Okay. He was saying the people he talked to were shocked to find out that Facebook feed wasn't just giving them the most recent updates. And I went, I don't know anybody who thinks that when they go on their Facebook news feed, it's just the most recent stuff in order of posting.
There's even an option that says most relevant.
Which is the default, I believe, right? I have a feeling he was addressing an audience who largely was going, yep, we get most of these things. It'd be like going to a big, I've got this big announcement to make. If you don't sleep well, you will be tired.
Wow!
Oh my
Thanks,
gosh.
Jack!
I had never thought of this. So I don't... I'm sure there are some people who, when they read this, were like, I had absolutely no idea, but it's not as big of a population as I think he was hoping it would be.
I found the whole thing kind of like hard to relate to for who I am and who he is. And sometimes I feel like I think he, you know, it's funny. I'm sitting here. We say, who did he write this for? Who did he write this for? He wrote it for himself. He 110% wrote this book for himself. Yep. And unless you fall into the demographic of who he is, you'll struggle with trying to adapt to it. I like this book, Stories That Stick, Kendra Hall. I like this book, and I thought it was a pretty good book. But, I mean, I felt like this was a writing for the general populace of people who tell stories, and that can be any demographic. But if you write to an individual group, which I feel he did, you're not going to get broader adoption of the book.
The one thing I haven't looked actually is the thing is though, it's a very successful book. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think it did very well.
It did all of the right marketing. You look at the back cover, has got Adam Grant and Susan Cain. So, like, part of what I do, maybe I'm not going deep enough, is who are the people he's getting to actually make recommendations on the book? Stephen Fry. I like Stephen Fry, but don't really think of Stephen Fry as a person I go to for self-help. So there's just a lot of people listening. I'm like, okay, they've got positive things to say about the book. All right, let's give it a read. That aside, with the book, I think we could go on forever talking about the negatives, but I think we're at the point where I think we can all agree, you know what? Maybe don't. If you haven't picked up the book yet, use this as your guide of saying, you know what? I'm good. What I would love to talk about is maybe some of the concepts from the book. Now, if we can leave that aside, shift our focus a little bit. Of which was stolen by the book. Yeah, joke there. I want to talk a little bit about flow state, because that is something that's brought up in the book that I don't feel like we ever really were able to go into too deeply. Lydia, I know you've done lots of reading on many of the topics. Have you done much looking into flow state?
Yes, a lot. Quite a lot, actually. It was sort of like I knew about it before I started reading into it. And it actually came from talking to my partner about his gaming habits. So I've always been into gaming, by the way, but I was never feverishly a gamer. Like, I've always had sort of like something that I was doing. Like, you know, I started with Heroes 3 of Might and Magic. By the way, I don't know if I'm speaking to the right audience, but so.
I know what that is.
Take out the gaming paraphernalia and artwork behind me. You're talking to the right audience.
Talking to the right audience. Fantastic. Great. I'm in the right place. So that's really where I started from. And then, you know, over time, I always sort of had a game that I was playing. Not like my partner. That is his primary hobby, right? And that's like, you know, where he needs to actually relax. And that's him, right? But I remember seeing him, you know, at the beginning when we first started dating, he was playing Monster Hunter, which is one of our favorite games to play together. And he was so focused into, you know, fighting and just, you know, it was incredible to actually witness, because like there could be a tsunami coming in from the, and he would just would not care. And he was enjoying himself so much. And especially like after he actually managed to finally defeat the monster, because like it was like a 2 or 3 hour sort of session for him. And he was just so ecstatic and he was so happy. And then I was just like, this is, I haven't experienced, I don't experience this of whatever is happening here. What's happening? And he actually addressed, he described it as a state of flow. Like, he's so into it. And then he said, like, you know, oh, I watched the video. That's how I know what it's called. And I'm like, oh, fantastic. So I went down the rabbit hole of actually looking into this and understanding what flow is. I don't know if I have a good description of what flow is, but I think that story describes it really. It's just how getting into an activity that puts your brain into such a wavelength, into such a rhythm that you forget time exists, hunger exists, people around you exist. And it's a positive thing. So it's not like it's very different from what we were describing earlier around doom scrolling. This is more of a satisfaction, like, oh, this is what my brain was built to do.
Yeah,
is that a good description? Exactly.
I think so. I've definitely looked into flow state stuff as well myself. And I have found for me, actually, gaming does the same thing. It was actually helpful for me to discover it because I spent a lot of time going, why do I play video games so much? I don't really understand it. Like, what am I getting out of it? And what I'm getting out of it is getting into flow, which I think a good description of flow that I found is it goes beyond the actual time that you're spending in it, which definitely is sort of the almost uninterruptible, unless someone intentionally tries to. You get so focused on something, you put your entire mental focus into it. Coming out of a state of flow, so coming out of playing some time really dedicated to a game I'm really enjoying, stress levels are down. I'll sleep better. I find my other interactions with family, with work, my mind has had a chance to reset. And that's what I think flow can really do for you, is help you to focus. It's weird. You focus on something intentionally for so long, but in a way that allows you to then relax and reset your brain during that. It's the weird ways that our brains work. And I think flow is critical. That flow state is critical to really true relaxation and focus in the rest of your life.
I think of this, and for me, it's not video game. I love the game, but it's video gaming is like a fun thing I do at night, relaxing. When I think of the state of flow, where I adapt that to me is when I'm working on my bike, when I'm working on a mechanical thing. That's my hobby. That's my primary thing to do. When I retire, I'll be selling and building old motorcycles. I've gone into my garage, and I look up, and it's 3:00, and I'm like, oh, wow, I haven't eaten yet. I haven't had any water yet either, and I have a blazing headache now. But I will literally... It's funny. I will literally lock myself into a flow of the satisfaction of rebuilding something, putting it on, making sure it works, not looking at my clock, my watch, and then it's headache. Oh, I got to eat. Oh, I got to have some water, and I'll go, and that'll take care of my headache. It's just because I didn't do those things. But I love being locked into a flow, and I never sleep so good than I do when I exhaust myself like that.
Mine is painting, by the way. So my thing that gets me into flow is painting. So I can lock myself into the art room on the other, the big store, and just draw and paint for hours and hours, to the point where my partner has to come in and go like, "Hey, have you moved today?
Yeah, have you eaten today? Yeah. Have you had anything to drink today? Like, oh no."
Yeah, and something like this hand is just like like twitching.
Yeah.
that's exactly right. The number of times, because I have two things. One is gaming. The other is technology tinkering. I love exploring new things I can do with technology in my house, almost to like a, why are you doing that? I don't know. It was a project. I wanted to learn how to do it. And so I did it. And that's actually how I spent this whole last weekend, which is almost embarrassing when people who don't understand that ask, they're like, what'd you do all weekend? You'd think I'm crazy if I fully described how I spent my entire weekend just tinkering with my home lab. But I got through the whole weekend and it was so enjoyable. It was so relaxing. It was what I needed to do. And even though, it was difficult, it provided challenges. I'm sure that happens, with painting. You get into something where you can't quite produce what you want. Or with motorcycle stuff, there's problems that you'll run into for sure. But it's the type of problem solving that my brain needs. And I definitely looked up and I was like, 2:30 a.m. Have I had breakfast from yesterday? I should probably eat, drink a lot of water, and go to bed.
Yeah, you got to drink the water, because I don't drink when I'm working sometimes. I won't even notice till I get the headache.
How did you discover painting was how you could get into that flow state?
So it actually took those couple of years of since, discovering that, what a flow state looks like from the outside. And it took me actually a couple of years to figure out that painting was for me at that point. And I think it was mostly because, so I've always sort of had painting, drawing as a hobby, but you know, ever since getting really into my career, like when I became a network engineer, when I got into, you know, being into pre-sales, it actually, I didn't have the time for it. So I really got back into it properly during COVID, right? It was one of the, you know, the very few positives of a very negative event was that I truly had a lot more time on my hands to get back into a hobby that was genuinely something I adored. And it was really sort of the last, I would say, year that I realized when, similar to you, Jack, is like when I'm stressed, when I have like a lot of things happening, I go sort of like recluse myself into painting something, a project. Someone has asked me like for a request of something to paint, and I would emerge 4 hours later feeling like you know, fresh, like as new if person. I've had a nap or something. Yeah, exactly. And I think that was really where it sort of like connected. It's like, oh, this is the thing, right? This is the actual thing that makes me, you know, get into that sort of feeling. And so just sort of like to highlight again, especially for folks listening that haven't really experienced this before or don't know what that this is what it is. It's like when you're doing something, but right at the edge of your ability, it's difficult enough to give you a challenge, but also not too difficult. And that's why I think like all of us sort of like are circling around things that are, it's possible for you to get challenged in any one of these things. And I think, by the way, for a lot of folks, this is video games because video games are made to get you into that flow state.
Yeah.
I'm not good enough for this just one thing yet. Like, let me dig into it a little bit. Let me do a little bit more. And then, but at the same time, like, it's not too easy where it's just like, oh yeah, I can do this with my eyes closed. Like, that's not flow. That's just not challenging.
Well, that's part one of our conversation with Lydia. Hope you guys enjoyed. Hope you're going to figure out how to get into your flow state.
Yes.
Between now and then, Adam, what's going to be your flow state before next week? What's going to focus on this week for you?
Oh, geez. You know, that's a great question. My flow state is going to be a documentation project I'm working on. I'm going to get into the flow, and I'm going to state my documentation well.
Wow. I don't think I've ever gotten into flow writing documentation, but okay.
That's about the encouragement I got from this book.
Oh. Well, if you do want to join us for any of our interview sessions that we have, please join us over on slack.demojockeys.com. Our next backstage is going with our guest next month is already scheduled for the beginning of May, I believe. So not too far away from now. So definitely
nice
check
weather,
there
folks.
If you're interested in the backstage. It'll be a lot of fun. And anything else, Adam? Anything else you want to leave the listeners with for this week?
You know, the only thing that I would like to add is have a good night.
Yeah, I suppose that's about right. Okay. Have a good night, everybody. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.